and welcome to Ronin Nation, a podcast dedicated to veterans' mental health. I'm your host, Dr. John Whalen, and I'll be conducting a series of podcasts looking at aspects of veterans' mental health and the treatment programs that are available to help them. So, to begin with, by way of background, I served in the Canadian military for almost 9 years before returning to university and completed a degree and qualification as a clinical psychologist, and came back to the military as a civilian psychologist and worked as the head of addictions for another 12 years. And so in our case, when we saw marijuana, it was usually treated for either abuse or for cannabis dependence. So it's really a bit of a shift now to view the same substance as a medication for the treatment of post-traumatic stress. So that's my background. But as a social scientist, it also means evaluating the evidence. And so today I really want to talk about the need for evidence, really, when we consider a substance or a drug such as cannabis for the treatment of PTSD. To start, much of the available information on the use of cannabis for the treatment of PTSD is from veterans and is anecdotal. I'm not aware of many or any well-designed studies looking at possible benefits or even side effects of cannabis among veterans who have been diagnosed with PTSD. Here in early 2015, there are two studies underway in North America, one in Colorado in the United States and another at the University of British Columbia. So don't get me wrong, anecdotal evidence can be a very important source of data and a good starting point in gathering unbiased scientific evidence, the standard required for health professionals such as myself, where the golden rule, of course, is not to do any harm, or if something is causing harm, to stop doing it. So what do we know from the science? Well, cannabis products have been around for many years and have a solid research base in treatments of physical illness such as cancer and glaucoma and the management of chronic pain. We know much less about marijuana's role as a treatment for mental health issues such as anxiety problems or depression, and in this case, post-traumatic stress disorder. And when we look at the neurobiological effects of cannabis on the brain, there are concentrations of cannabinoid receptors in the basal ganglia, which are associated with our emotional functioning, in the cerebellum, associated with our balance, coordination, basic life functions such as heart rate and blood pressure, and the hippocampus, which is associated with memory. And if you know much about post-traumatic stress disorder research, the problem of memory integration has been identified as a central aspect of chronic or lingering post-trauma reactions. Now, when we look at marijuana, it wasn't until the 60s that the active psychoactive component of marijuana was identified as THC or delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, and has a number of other cannabinoids, CBDs, CBNs, CBGs, and they all have different actions in the brain and in the body. So marijuana can vary considerably in ratios of THC to other components. It can range, the THC levels can range from 1 to 30% based on the particular strains and the cultivation methods. Generally, THC concentrations have increased by about tenfold since the 1970s. Cannabis extracts include waxes or oils, and some of these can have THC concentrations up to 90%. It can be consumed, oils, waxes, food products, and it can be inhaled. And most of the people I know either smoke it or use vaporizers to obtain the medication. Now, in the case of ingestion, it often has a delayed effect by going through the gut, so it can often lead to greater consumption because you're not having the effect right away, and this can lead to strong effects and sometimes adverse effects from overuse. Overconsumption. Now, when we look at, again, these are not well-controlled studies, but looking at folks who've come through let's say, the VA hospitals in the United States, people with PTSD seem to have greater availability of cannabinoid type 1, that's CB1 receptors, compared to healthy non-PTSD controls. And that raises the question, you know, why would that be? It could be related to prior cannabis use before joining the military, or it could be marijuana use within the military prior to the development of PTSD. So these are really research questions, and so we don't have an answer. But the takeaway is that for those folks with these higher CB1 receptors, it may be very difficult to quit the drug. Now, in the studies of the use of cannabis, it has been shown to decrease anxiety and vigilance, and one study showed a decrease in the hyperarousal clusters of post-traumatic stress. So veterans diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder have a hard time stopping marijuana. It's associated with greater craving and withdrawal symptoms, primarily psychological withdrawal, but there are also physiological signs of withdrawal, most notably increased irritability, problems with sleep, and a resurgence of PTSD symptoms when the medication or when the drug is stopped, which is again associated with a higher degree of relapse. So for THC users with PTSD who start, let's say, other forms of treatment, they can benefit from the treatment without necessarily going into abstinence. But in my observation, in conducting both individual therapy programs and group therapy programs with veterans over the years, it's usually associated with a slower treatment progress. And why is that? Well, part of resolving trauma means being able to identify and address the emotional components of the trauma. And that seems to be harder to access for people who are on various medications, not only marijuana. Sometimes it's the antidepressant medications. Certainly the benzodiazepines present a real challenge. And cannabis also fits within that realm of just not being quite present emotionally. Now, the other version, this also includes the other versions of cannabis, primarily the synthetic versions, Nabilone, known by the brand name of Sesamet. It was initially used, again, for pain management, fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis. And some years ago, it began to be prescribed for sleep, and also for vigilance or just that hyperactivity during the daytime. And people reported benefits from that. But a lot of the veterans I know didn't like the side effects, including dry mouth, feeling as if they're high or stoned, a dizziness, problems with concentration, changes in their mood. And of course, anybody who had a history of psychosis where they lost touch with reality, or bipolar disorder, or any cardiovascular risks, well, they would not have been able to receive the drug in any event. So while some people benefited, some others didn't like the side effects. When the licensing for medical cannabis or medical marijuana started a few years ago, a number of people signed on, and they've reported reductions in their use of other psychotropic medications, and also for their pain medications. So I want to be, you know, pretty clear. Again, from the folks I see who are treated low THC cannabis for chronic pain, the changes are very notable in terms of how they're able to function. A lot less irritability, a lot more social. They really seem to benefit from that version of the drug. Now, in other people that I have seen who have been treated with cannabis or used cannabis for the psychological problems such as PTSD, some of them have gone into addiction treatment programs because they've developed a dependence. Some have had some fairly significant side effects in terms of derealization, as in near psychotic like experiences or really increased paranoia. I see a number of people in groups now who have stopped their cannabis use. So what am I saying in all this? There is a promise from these research studies that there may be a version of cannabis that may be helpful, but until we can decide who will benefit, the particular strains, the particular dose combinations, it is really a trial and error. It's really an experiment with whomever the prescriber is, and that needs to be also taken into account. In the East Coast, in terms of psychologists who participate in programs where cannabis is a component of treatment, I'm not aware of many or any psychologists who are involved at this point, because I think we're really waiting for the evidence to come in, and that may take some time. So what I'd advise to people, if you're considering use of cannabis, that you first of all have a healthcare professional. It's usually going to be a GP, general practitioner, that you trust, and you talk about alternative treatments, you talk about the expected benefits, and you also talk about the possibility of adverse effects or some of the things that may not go well and what to do of those when those occur. So I hope this provides at least some basis for you as a veteran to make an informed decision about whether you will shift to the use of cannabis under prescription, of course. And just as a side note, most of the practitioners that I am aware of, usually cannabis will only be prescribed when other forms of medications or pharmaceutical interventions have been tried and they have not been successful. So I wish you all the best with this. If you have any additional questions, I can be reached in different ways through email, j.whalen, PhD, at gmail.com, website www.goingcrazyinthegreenmachine.com, or through Twitter, John Whalen 3.